brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. I haven't changed that in 10 years, have I? 10 years ago, in a little studio of a small Denver radio station, I met a guy named Dana Jansen. And since, Dana's traveled with Josh McDowell in a ministry to teens. He's graduated Denver Seminary. He's got a degree in philosophy. He's a local pro-life speaker from Colorado. And Dana is here in the studio. Dana, welcome to Bob Enyar Live.
Well, good morning, Bob. Do you remember that small studio you were in 10 years ago? Do you remember that?
right off the South Platte River.
That's right.
Next to the sewage treatment center.
Next to the Dust Bowl on the other side.
And it was in a mobile home or a trailer.
That's about the size
it was
of
in
it.
A trailer, just some little building that you tow around on wheels. And we used to say from high atop the KQXI towers. When I said that for a year and a half, people thought we were in a downtown skyscraper.
And there you were. I remember that. Well, thanks for having me on here. I was going to get my hair cut for your show last week, but didn't have time. But seeing you, I guess I'm appropriate here.
That's right.
That's okay. They say I have a face for radio, so I'm at the right place here.
Oh, you know, and we hadn't seen each other in 10 years.
That's right.
When you walked into our KGov studios here, I immediately
recognized you. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I was proud of you.
So it's great to see you again.
I brought a quiz with me here this morning, Bob. A quiz. This is off of the website of BARNA, BARNA organization.
George Barna, researcher.
Does polling polling amongst Christians regarding religious issues and so forth.
And Gallup has given BARNA the highest of accolades about how good his research is. So what do you got?
Yeah, Barna's been doing this for decades. Here's a quiz regarding born-again Christians. Okay, this is a survey of people who say that they have accepted Jesus Christ, who say that he is the reason that they're going to heaven.
And they're born again. Okay.
So they do not accept self-identification. They don't say, are you a born-again Christian? Yes. That's not what they...
They go further.
Right.
They say, do you believe Jesus is your personal Savior?
Have you made a commitment and so forth?
Okay.
All right. What percentage of born-again Christians agree that Satan is not a living being, but just a symbol of evil?
I'd say 40%.
Not bad, 47%. Nearly half of Christians think that Satan is just a symbol of evil.
Wow.
So not bad. Not bad on your part. Not bad.
Wow, what terrible on their part. and what that shows is they're ignorant of the Bible.
Yeah, and that's what this whole survey shows, is that we have fundamental misunderstanding of basic biblical concepts within the Christian community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number two. What percentage of born-agains believe that if a person is good enough, they can earn a place in heaven?
I would say that is 65%.
Oh, no, too high. 31%.
Oh, I'm sorry.
31%.
Praise the Lord.
Well, that's one-third of Christians believe that if you're good enough, you can earn your way to heaven.
This is people who claim to be born again
are
attested to be born again.
That's correct.
Okay, so that would maybe exclude a lot of the members of the mainline churches. Let's say mainline Presbyterian Lutheran churches, American Baptists, who are liberals, who believe almost anybody could go to heaven, but they wouldn't call themselves born again, I guess.
Well, you're asking a specific denomination question that really can't answer here based on this survey.
All right, go
ahead. Be interesting, though.
All right. So 31%, a third think you could be good enough to get to heaven.
Right, one-third of born-again Christians.
All right.
Now, what percentage of Christians believe that while he lived on earth, Jesus committed sins just like other people?
8%.
24%.
Oh, my.
One out of four Christians believe that Jesus committed sins
like
other people.
Oh, my. See, now those numbers don't jive to me. They're too close for such a dramatic... But anyway, go ahead.
All right. What percentage of born-again Christians believe that after he was crucified and died, Jesus Christ did not return to life physically?
Well, let's put
Is that a complex question?
No. I'd say 20%.
15%.
15%.
Jesus did not rise from the dead. 15% of born-again Christians.
So a lot of those who believe Jesus was a sinner also believed he rose from the dead. This is it's weird. People are weird.
Next question. Last question here. What percentage of born-again Christians believe that it does not matter what faith you follow because they all teach the same lessons?
Let's see. 10%.
26%. One out of four Christians. Doesn't matter what faith you believe.
It's just bizarre.
Now, this points to a fundamental misunderstanding of basic biblical doctrines amongst the Christian community. Okay, mm-hmm. What the subject we're talking about today, the issue of abortion, is just one more item on your chart here, reflection of basic ignorance of fundamental biblical ideas, the issue mm-hmm. of abortion. Because it appears that the Christian community does vote pro-life, okay, in George...
Barnum.
In Barna's surveys here, 57% voted for Bush, 42% voted for Gore, if you want to count that as a pro-life choice.
And who voted for the pro-life one? Anyway, go ahead. Okay.
Well,
so a majority of the Christians take a pro-life position.
Voted for George. Now, let me qualify that. Actually, research goes on and say that the primary motivating issue for Christians is not pro-life, it's economics. Okay, and Ralph Reed said that 10 years ago. He wrote that in his book 10 years ago. So that's not a big surprise that people do not vote on the issue of abortion.
Ralph Reed, Pat Robertson's son-in-law, who was part of the Christian Coalition.
That's right, 10, 15 years ago now.
Yeah, he resigned.
He wrote the same thing, made the same comment that people are primarily motivated by financial reasons, taxes and so forth, yeah, rather than moral issues.
The book of Proverbs warns against that as a sure path to destruction.
I would say that's probably a good warning.
Right.
Watch out for money. Money.
Yeah, it's fine to be prosperous, but if it comes at the cost of moral decay, your money will ultimately lead to your destruction.
Now, according to Gallup polls, other research, I'd say about one quarter of the population is avidly pro-life and will vote pro-life. Okay, and I think that's probably an accurate figure in terms of that we really do not have a pro-life voice in America. Okay, in terms of a majority of voting public, we cannot really influence on the issue of pro-life. We do influence on the issue, other conservative issues, but
that pro-life, we join with others on when we go to vote.
Right, and we happen to agree with the pro-life issue with them, but that's not the primary vote. Although, again, statistics are hard, by the way. Mm-hmm. So we got to qualify all these statistics. It is evident, and Barna makes it evident, that the born-again vote was very significant in this election because it was so close. Mm-hmm. Okay, and 57% voted for Bush amongst the born-again peoples. 42% voted for Gore. Significant difference amongst non-Christians. So that is an important vote. Anyway, my point is, we are grossly ignorant of the issue of abortion in the Christian community, and surveys also show that a significant amount of Christians and Catholics do get abortions. In fact, it's very similar. The statistics are very similar to those who are
secular,
not Christians.
Right.
Yeah. So we have a significant problem that
the
is
same
not...
Same thing with divorce and premarital sex. It seems to be the numbers are not all that different among conservative church congregations versus the general public.
Yeah, I think that's true. I haven't gone through the research enough to figure out on the issue of sex and so forth. Mm-hmm. But there's great movements in the last 10 years as far as the abstinence programs and great movement on that. There is not, however, a big movement in the Christian community on the issue of abortion in terms of educating students, high school students, how to communicate and defend the pro-life position. Mm. That's what my goal in life is today. Mm. That's my work. I'm starting a nonprofit organization. And we are going into schools and churches to teach teens to defend the pro-life position. Lots of teens who want to be pro-life and who are pro-life, but they really don't know enough about it
to
go out and speak to their secular friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my goal, to do apologetic training.
All right. Now, I'd like to find out more about this ministry of yours, but maybe one way we could get into this is... with some role-playing.
Okay.
Let
me start out and explain how I teach teens to defend the Christian or the pro-life position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to make it very simple. a lot of people, pro-abortionists, want to make it very complicated. It's a complicated issue. You have to understand all these reasons why women have abortions, and you have to be compassionate and have to understand all these things. It's a complicated issue. The Supreme Court said that in this Roe v. Wade 1973 decision. It's a complicated decision. We just can't decide for the woman. Okay, I want to make it simple, and I teach teens to ask one question. What is it? Write that down. Write that down.
Right.
What is it?
What is it?
Okay. All Very things good. Need to point to this question. All questions need to point to the answer to this question. What is it? Is it a human life or not? Mm. That's the question. Mm-hmm. Because if it's a human life, then I ask teens, well, give me some good reasons that we should take the life of living human beings. Okay. Should we take the life of living human beings because a woman doesn't have enough money? Does that give her a right to take the life of her one-year-old child? She's got to go downtown, buy cigarettes and pop. She can't spend another $1.50 on baby food. She just does not have the money. Mm. Shouldn't she be able to kill her one-year-old child? Well, no. How about for relationship reasons? Susan Smith, she's got two babies, and her boyfriend doesn't want these two babies around. Okay, so what does she do? She packs them into the car, drives the car into the lake, and kills her two babies. Doesn't that give her a right to kill her two children because she's having a relationship problem?
Very good, very good.
No, it doesn't. Okay. How about, depression? Woman's depressed one morning. Doesn't that give her the right to kill her one-year-old child? No, of course not. None of these reasons are significant reasons to kill a one-year-old child. But yet the Supreme Court of the United States said that all of these are acceptable reasons to kill an unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
In any time during the 9 months of pregnancy. So I want them to focus on this one issue. Once we answer this one question, then there are no reasons to kill a living human being. Is it a privacy issue? Well, do we allow parents to beat to death their one-year-old children because of privacy?
No.
Of course not.
Can't even spank them half the time.
Well, that's another issue, but we won't touch about that.
Right.
So, is it a human being? The answer, of course, and obviously, is yes, it's a living human being. And what I do, by the way, I present research from medical textbooks. I went down to the University of Colorado, to the University of Colorado Health Department, the training division for doctors is where they go to learn to be a doctor. And I pulled some of the textbooks off the shelf of the library, and I opened them up and looked at what the texts say about the beginning of life. Mm-hmm. And I opened the first one, and Bob, what do you think it said? When does life begin?
At conception.
It begins at conception. And I thought, how strange. I better look at another book.
The Supreme Court couldn't figure that out.
The Supreme Court, no. They did not know when life begins. That's correct.
They said they'll leave that decision for a later court or generation.
Well, that was 27 years ago, back in the dark ages of science and medicine, of course. So
right, right.
They didn't really understand. So I opened up book after book on embryology, and every single textbook I read says the same thing. Says that life begins at conception, or fertilization, by the way, is the technical medical term. Life begins at fertilization. No one's confused about that in the medical community. But somehow, the pro-aborts are all confused, and we don't know when life begins. By the way, here's the great response for we don't know when life begins. I asked the question, if we did know when life begins, mm-hmm. would you stand with me and protect that life?
Ooh.
Okay, that puts them on the spot.
That
if
is
we did
great,
know,
Dana.
If we did know when life begins, would you agree with me to protect that human life? And then, of course, I present the evidence that shows, or the medical textbooks show, that life begins at conception.
Dana, that is so great
to, like that?
To get that commitment from them up front, because these it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
So where were we on the issues? All those issues, privacy, health,
relationships,
economic. Depression, she's depressed.
Right.
Does that give her the right to kill her one-year-old child? If it's illegal after birth, it should be illegal before birth. Very simple. Very simple. Do we force our morality? This is the first question I get, by the way, in public schools. Should we force our morality? Now, here's what happens. After I've gone through those questions about the one-year-old, I ask, wait a minute. Didn't you all agree that we should force our morality over the one-year-old? Didn't every single student here agree? Nobody said, well, we shouldn't force our morality on that parent who's beating his one-year-old child to death. No one says that.
Right.
But somehow, we can't force a morality on the unborn child. Mm. So that's where I bring that up, and I say, we've already agreed to force our morality, so I'm just saying let's force our morality here as before life as well as there after life. Same life. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Again, back to that question, that one question, what is it? Is it a human being or not? And do we take the lives of innocent human beings for the reason that you want to bring up? So go ahead. Now you can grill me. Now you can be Bob the pro-choicer for once in your life.
Now, and I've never done this because role-playing, I've got a lot of friends who role-play constantly as a form of education and training. And I've always had a hard time doing it because I hate to even utter the words to defend the vile things that people who hate God do. But let's say you've already given this position, and now if you've made this much of the argument, and I'm trying to debate with you. Okay, so what can I muster up to argue against what you've said?
And by the way, in 5 minutes, I've just given you my entire pro-life presentation. That's mm-hmm. it. It is so simple. Everything else I give, the rest of the 20-minute presentation, is a little color, adding to the numbers, the 1.2, 1.3 million babies killed mm-hmm. each year and so forth. Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's the fundamental. They can now walk out the door and defend the pro-life position with those simple, simple statements.
All right. This child, this fetus may be a living human being, as you've established. But what right does society have to force a woman to carry that fetus for 9 months?
Ken, excellent question. Does the society force a baby on her?
Well, if she's been raped, and if your argument can't defend the issue of rape, then it fails.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the 99% of abortions first. Let's talk about the general case.
No, I want to talk about rape.
We'll get to that. Not a problem. But let's talk about the 99% first. Number one, do we force women to have babies? The point is that the baby is already made at conception. No one forces a woman to conceive a child,
mm-hmm.
okay? Except the case of rape, and we'll get that in a second. Just like we force a parent to take care of his one-year-old, exact reasons. We force them to take care of their unborn babies. Okay?
And that's it. See, this is why I can't role play. But, but you got it exactly. If you can't force a woman to carry a baby for 9 months, how can you force her to care for a child for 15, 18 years? And we have laws against abandonment. You cannot abandon or
right.
sell your baby. You have a responsibility because you're the parent.
Right, exactly. So we force to protect that existing baby. We do not force a woman to conceive a child. And, of course, that's the way the pro-abortion community wants to think of it, that we force them to be pregnant and force them to carry this baby against their will. Well, I think they have a choice. Okay, 99%. Now, let's talk about the 1% of the rape issue.
Yeah, and normally, Dana, I try to not make arguments for my pro-life position that don't apply to rape.
Right.
I try to never make such arguments because then ultimately those arguments fail. They might be handy for convincing somebody in some circumstance, but in a debate, or ultimately, they wouldn't wash.
Mm-hmm. I agree, but for students, for high school purposes, mm-hmm. I want to teach them to talk about the most common reasons of abortion and not the exceptions, not the medical health reasons, not the 1% of rape.
Argument against abortion, each part of your argument against abortion should stand for rape.
Right, I agree.
And if it doesn't, it should not be your argument against
abortion.
Right,
I agree. Okay, let's do that. We'll line up a handful of one-year-old babies and ask the question to the pro-abortions, which baby should we kill because his father was a rapist? Okay. Would you accept the killing of this one-year-old child because his father was a rapist?
Mm-hmm.
If we will not accept it at 1 year old, why should we accept it before birth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, same baby, couple mm-hmm. weeks or months difference in age. Why should we kill that baby? And if
because
you won't accept it after birth, we cannot accept it before birth.
Because you're punishing the woman by forcing her to carry a baby that that was forced upon her.
Should we kill her one-week-old baby because we're forcing her in the exact same laws you just said regarding abandonment and so
forth? Well, if she was raped, the society wouldn't force her to raise the baby that she was forced into conceiving. Society wouldn't do that.
Well, she is. No, you're absolutely wrong. Well, you just said the abandonment laws apply until she relinquishes that baby.
Well, if she was raped, our courts would not force her to raise that child. They would take the baby at birth. The courts
only if she
that.
Relinquished it. No.
She could ask to keep the baby.
Of course.
But she has no obligation to keep that baby. Once the baby's delivered, she could relinquish it.
And
no court would force her to raise the baby if she was raped.
I would suspect that once a baby is born, she would be, as a legal mother, she would be under the same legal as anyone else who had a baby.
Okay.
I don't think that the law makes distinction for a mother's responsibility because
right.
she was raped.
Anyway, and we can see why the pro-aborts like to focus on rape and incest,
right.
which I always simplify as the just rape, because incest is rape. So it's just rape.
Right. I agree.
I think we should take this a little further because I don't think we've put our finger right on the answer, the best way to respond to that.
But, yeah, the best way to respond to it, is it a living human being? Do we take the lives of living human beings because their father is a rapist?
Right.
That's the question.
Right. And I'm agreeing that it is a living human being. In fact, who's the college professor, the feminist, is her name Kathleen Kenyon or something like that, who came out a couple years ago and wrote a book, and she was quoted all over the country saying abortion is the killing of a child, and we have the right to do it because we're women and we have the right over our own bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that's one of the latest developments in the pro-abort movement, and she received a lot of accolades from that position. That was pretty sick, obviously. But, a woman has been raped. And what right do we have to tell her that she has to keep that baby?
The same right that we have to tell her not to kill that baby if it's 1 week old. Same right.
Well, but I'm saying that when the baby's 1 week old,
mm-hmm.
That baby is no longer the burden to her that it is when it's in her womb. The baby could be adopted away.
Okay.
And
but
she has no obligation to raise that baby.
Right, but she does not have a right to kill the baby at 1 week old.
No, she doesn't have the right
okay.
to kill it.
Now, what you're asking is a separate question, I think. And the separate question is legal recourse or recompense to victims of crimes. And unfortunately, which I might disagree with, we in this country, in America, do not have recompensation laws for victims of crimes. Okay, if your car gets stolen and gets crashed and whatever, criminal...
There's no restitution.
Right, there's no restitution. He does not recompense you for that. So we all bear the burden of crimes, and in this case, a woman bears a particular burden for X amount of months, 9 months, on the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking two different questions.
Well, I think your answer was exactly right, but I'd add something, and I'd say these two things. I'd say you have no way to unburden yourself other than killing the child, and this child is as much your child as any child ever could be. You are the mother mm-hmm. of this child. Even though the father is a criminal, you are the mother, and a crime was committed against you, and if you now go and kill this baby, you are guilty of a crime.
Good. Can I write that down?
Well, sure. It's on the tape.
Excellent. I like that.
Anyway, I'd make those three arguments in
Good.
Succession and say them so quickly they confuse the audience and they think you're right. No, I'm only kidding. Obviously, those things are right, and I think that's a solid rebuttal to the rape argument. Mm-hmm. And I think rape is our most difficult issue to defend against.
In terms of emotional on the pro-abortion side, I think you're correct as well.
Right.
And that's why, again, like I said, I try to focus on the majority, the 93% majority for socioeconomic reasons, according
mm-hmm.
to pro-abortion sources. Financial, they're not mature enough, they're not ready to have a child, those kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And to paint a different picture in the minds of the students as to what abortion really entails as opposed to the picture that they're used to hearing. They're used to hearing about the health problems. They're used to hearing about the rape problems. And they get a picture in their mind that that's what abortion is about. We're aborting 1 million, over a million babies because of the horrible rape issue and the horrible
right.
medical issues.
It's bizarre.
But that's what the picture in their mind is. And I want to focus, and I do quite a bit of that in my lecture, to say, look, the 93% just for no reason at all, basically. Fundamental economic reasons and mm-hmm. not ready for. They don't want to change their career, those kinds of issues.
Right.
Now, to talk about what you brought up about Kathleen Kenyon, here, there's two directions that pro-abortionists are going to take today. Okay. Number one, this has been going on for the last couple of years, is to admit that a baby's a human being. Okay. Within the last 20 years, medical research has significantly changed our view of that unborn baby. Okay, you got to remember back in the 70s that ultrasound was not readily available. We did not see ultrasound video mm-hmm. of or pictures of unborn child, and hence Bernard Nathanson's silent scream in the early 80s. Okay,
video.
That was really the first time that they saw what was happening in an abortion. Okay, that changed the face of abortion. Okay, or understanding of what unborn baby is. Today, by the way, we have live in utero footage. I have a videotape that I use in my class presentation. 4 week to 12 week unborn babies. Absolutely phenomenal. You've got to see this video if you have not seen it.
I haven't
absolutely
seen it.
Phenomenal. Fully developed at 8 weeks. You can see the whole thing's moving and breathing. You can see the heart pumping. Live videotape. Absolutely phenomenal.
My wife is pregnant right now with between us, our seventh son. She's 5 months pregnant.
You've got to get this video. It's only $35 for you, $31. I'll make you a good deal
all
here.
All right.
You've got to buy this video and show it to your children to show them what's happening.
What's the
name
of it?
Absolutely phenomenal. The Wonder of Life.
The Wonder of Life.
It's designed for small children. In fact, 28
minutes. Oh, that's
minutes.
So great.
Absolutely phenomenal.
We have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they know that there's a baby inside of mommy, but they can't quite figure it out.
You've got to buy this. Tremendous.
Ugh.
Okay, where were we? The development of the baby. Okay, science has changed significantly in 20 years of our understanding of what's happening inside the womb. Okay, mm-hmm. In the last several years, the pro-abortion community is coming to that admission. You simply can't deny the humanity of the unborn. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're doing two things. Number one, other books have been written, exactly what you said. We admit it's a human, but the rights of the woman are still a priority. And the book I read, I can't remember the title now, the book I read was explaining why the unborn fetus is a parasite, mm-hmm. and it's an invader in her body, the woman's body, and she has the rights to get rid of this invader in her body.
Warren Hearn and Boulder.
Warren Hearn does the same,
right.
makes the same statement, the parasite. Yes, that's one move that they make. The other move they make is to assert that it is a human being, but say it's not a person. Hmm. Okay, it's a human being and it's not a person.
Yeah, that's some bizarre legal twisted argument.
Well, it's back to the Supreme Court, 1973. That's what they said. The Constitution does
person
not consider
born in the United States
an unborn human being, a person under the Constitution. So
right.
It does not have constitutional rights. That's
and that's
what they came to.
And that's a twisted interpretation of the Constitution.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Unquestionably. And can you tell me why it's a twisted interpretation?
Well, they quote part of the Constitution that just mentions in passing any person born in the United States, da-da-da, has these particular rights. Mm-hmm. And they ignore
the 14th Amendment.
They ignore the preamble, which states that this Constitution is for ourselves and our posterity. And there's no way to define posterity that does not include an unborn child. And you could not deprive someone of life or limb without due process. For the statement in passing that the 14th Amendment applied to someone born in the U.S., that's because otherwise in court you'd have to argue, well, where was the child conceived? Well, was he conceived on Friday night or Tuesday morning?
And where was he?
Where was he? And were you on an American military base? Or where were you when the baby was conceived? That would be bizarre to establish citizenship. So citizenship comes when you are born in this country, whereas your right as a person, as a human being, comes when you're conceived to us and our posterity.
Yeah. The 14th Amendment uses the phrase, the born person. And to the born person, it gives certain citizenship rights. Okay, the born person. The phrase born person, if person that word only, if that word person referred to a born person, then the phrase a born person is a redundant phrase.
It's irrelevant, right.
Okay.
Right.
You would not say a born redundant. Born person.
Right.
So I would argue that person
yeah,
is at minimal misunderstood in the Constitution or does not address, simply does not address the issue of unborn in terms of its personhood. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're off track here again. Anyway, back to what abortionists today say. They're going to say that, yes, it's a human being, but it's not a person with rights. Okay, that's the phrase that they like to focus on. It's not a person with rights. Now, here's the question. What entails personhood? And if you start that question, you're all of a sudden into all kinds of books you can read, philosophers, who debate on when personhood begins. For example, some believe that personhood begins when an unborn child has a brainwave, or maybe it's a heartbeat, or maybe it's viability, or the Supreme Court says it's birth. Or Peter Singer at Princeton University says, well, it's about a month after birth. Mm. Or Michael Tooley, right here at Boulder University, by the way, says the same thing. About a month old, he's written that for many years, that he believes that we should be able to kill it up until about a month because that's not a person.
Now, yeah, I just right now I want to hand you this video, Infanticide in the New York Times, a 3-page article. I read the whole article in the video. I did this on TV. A whole 3 pages arguing that it should be legal to kill a baby in the first month after birth for any reason, and that women who kill their children after birth are not monsters. They're nice, healthy young women.
That was Steven Pinker.
Yes.
MIT professor.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Thanks for the video.
You're welcome.
All right. You interrupted me again, Bob.
I'm sorry. I keep doing that.
Where was I?
Okay, well, you were there. You were about, yes, we admit it's a baby.
It's not a person. So we've got all these different estimates or arbitrary guesses as to when personhood becomes. I've got one Los Angeles Times article from Dr. McMahon, who does partial birth abortions, and he says, you know, I believe that personhood starts when the mother accepts the baby. Okay, how do you like that?
That's great.
Mother accepts the baby, it becomes a person. Mm-hmm. So now I ask the pro-abortion person, I say, which arbitrary definition would you like to choose? Okay, how did you come up with arbitrarily deciding at birth? Why not when he has brainwaves? Why not when he has interests, personal interests and desires? Mm. That's what Peter Singer writes, by the way, personal interests and desires. That makes him a person. Mm. Okay, and by the way, animals, certain animals can have rights of personhood, but unborn babies don't.
Not babies, right.
And newborn babies, in fact, Peter Singer's argument goes on, newborn babies do not have those rights and desires either.
They're less valuable than a pig or a dog.
Right, or the same value, actually. Mm. So which arbitrary decision of personhood would you like to choose, and what is your evidence to support that choice of personhood? That's the fundamental question I ask regarding the personhood issue. Why did you come up with this arbitrary decision? And it really is arbitrary. When I paint that picture, look at what all these different people have decided arbitrarily on the definition of personhood. Why should we choose one or the other? And why not then just go with what the medical textbooks say, and it's human being, we should protect all human beings. Put the burden back on them to define and defend mm-hmm. that arbitrary choice.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I'm pondering, thinking through. I'm trying to think how kids would respond to some of this if they were not pro-lifers. What if you went into a class, a public school class, and gave this presentation?
Mm-hmm.
I think even the way you've done it, I think it would be almost as powerful as if you're talking to a bunch of Christian kids.
Yeah, I think the presentation is very powerful. By the way, I use a strictly scientific and philosophic approach. I do not do a biblical approach at all, mm-hmm. again, because the students need to go out and be able to communicate to a world that does not appreciate at all mm-hmm. our biblical references. So they need to be able to defend it philosophically and scientifically. That's mm-hmm. what I communicate. So, yeah, I think it is very, very powerful. In fact, when I was in Littleton High School 2 years ago now, the teacher came up to me afterwards, after the second or third class I did, and said, this is the best pro-life presentation I've ever seen. And this guy has had pro-life people for the last 23 years in his class and came up to me and said, this is the first time I've ever seen it done like this.
Wow.
In fact, he had another person doing political interest the same day I was doing, and she came up to me afterwards and said, I can't believe it. I've never had this explained to me.
Have
like
you
this.
Videotaped the presentation?
I don't have a videotape.
Oh, come on now.
I told you, I'm a Dana. Face. I have a face for radio. So.
Okay, listen. No, that's not true to start with. If you get one of these gigs in a high school class, let us know, and we'll videotape it.
Okay.
And we'll make a deal with you where we could distribute the videotape, and you could. You get a master, we get a master. And we'll do that.
Now, let me tell you the...
Because you're good.
Well, thanks.
That's why
from
we...
Bob Benyard.
No, but you are good, Dana. I mean, you know, our crew here, they're pretty hearted, the guys out here. And they're cheering and clapping the whole time.
Now, let me tell you the heart. I haven't even told you the secret of this whole thing. The heartbeat of what I do, my presentation. I make two video presentations, okay? The first one is what I described to you, in utero, living babies.
You don't show that whole 28-minute
video. I show about 4 or 5 minutes of it.
Okay.
Okay, just to get the idea of it. Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely phenomenal. Get the video. $31 for you. Then I show a 4 or 5 minute clip of aborted fetuses.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I do this every place I go. I won't do a presentation if I can't do my abortion video. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's what changes hearts and minds.
Uh-huh.
You have to understand, both, by the way, in the Christian community and outside the Christian community, tremendous ignorance and denial as to what abortion does to an unborn child.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, or the most successful thing, that overcomes ignorance and denial is footage, the pictures of aborted babies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a couple minutes long. I preview it, I announce it to them, and I tell them what they're going to see. I allow students to leave the room. Please, I don't want you to watch this video if you don't want to watch it, so please leave the room.
Good.
Which, by the way, is very important because it eliminates arguments afterwards. I gave them the opportunity to leave, and they chose to sit and watch it, so no arguments afterwards.
And they don't leave anyway.
They don't leave. No. Oh, I always get a few, handful.
Oh,
one,
you
one
do?
Yeah, for various reasons.
What age group might leave?
Well, I do high school, 9th to 12th grade.
So it may be women and girls who've had abortions.
Oh, other issues, family issues, maybe not themselves, but they might be close to someone who has had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. I've never talked to enough of them to know
okay.
to know why, but
right.
that's my suspicion.
Okay.
So that is the heartbeat, to see what we're doing and again saying...
Oh, and they might be pregnant right then and considering an abortion.
Even better, yes.
And they don't
they
want
need
to see
know.
It.
Yeah.
And they think if they see it, they may not be able to go through with it.
Right. By the way, I follow up with an abortion clip, a pro-abortion clip, about 60 seconds long, where they show the after... abortion, after an 8-week abortion, okay, they dump it out in a dish, and of course it's just a blood and little tissue mass and so forth. It's not identifiable in any way, shape, or form. And they say, quote, "It's not a baby like anti-abortionists say it is," unquote. And I asked them, well, what's wrong with that picture based on what I just showed them? And an 8-week baby, of course, is a fully formed baby. It's got
right.
all its organs, it's got all its parts, it's got its toes and fingers and everything
right.
at 8 weeks.
Heartbeat, brainwaves.
Heartbeat. And I say, what's wrong with this picture? Well, it's been through a blender, the abortion machine. It literally sucks out the 8-week-old baby
right.
and puts it through a blender, and they dump it out.
The
and just
vacuum
a,
cleaner.
Just a mash of blood and a little tissue, and doesn't look like a baby at all. And so I show them that. This is what they're telling them.
And why don't they show them before it goes through the vacuum cleaner?
Well, that'd be too much truth, don't you think?
Yeah, that'd be like taking a Jew in Auschwitz and chopping them up, putting them in wax in a bucket and say, that doesn't look like a person.
Well, actually, I used very similar. What I say is, how about Adolf Eichmann comes to the court with a bag of ashes and says, does this look like a Jew to you?
That's good.
We don't burn Jews here.
Yeah,
what do you mean? This is just
good.
A bag of ashes.
Right.
So
yeah, it's better than mine.
My point is, again, back to what I do, my work here, is to train teens to do, to defend the pro-life position. I have a student manual. Did I mail you a student manual? I'll have to give you one of those.
How much is that?
Oh, for you, $5.
Okay. All right.
This ain't cheap, you know. I got an organization to run here.
We're all the same, us activists.
But the problem is that they are not trained in a systematic way to defend the pro-life position, and the churches are silent, Bob. The churches are silent. They're afraid to deal with the issue, or they're not trained properly to deal with the issue.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into churches in the Denver area. I want to get into churches anywhere I can around the country.
Have you done any presentation at Faith Bible Chapel or Maranatha Christian school?
At Faith Bible Chapel. A colleague of mine has been in there last year, and he'll be in there again this year. At Maranatha, they told me, the principal told me that we are pro-life already. We don't need you. Go home.
Well, it might be true, Dana. They might tell me the same, too, because they're very pro-life. But why don't I make a call there?
Would you?
And,
oh, tremendous.
Yeah,
tremendous.
And see if, because, you know, the truth, you didn't call me at first. Someone I know in the pro-life community said, why don't you have Dana Jensen on talk about abortion? And I thought, well, why don't I just shoot myself in the head? Because that's all we do, and we don't need any more of it. But after talking to you personally, I realized, hey, this would be great, and it's a shot of adrenaline because you bring new insights and strong arguments and a powerful presentation. So
And again, let me tell you why what I do is so unique. There is no one organization in the Denver area dedicated solely to train teens to speak on the pro-life issue.
Right.
No one's doing it. No one's going into schools and doing presentations
it's
on a regular basis.
It's not really happening.
There are, you know, there are one or two people doing it on a once in a while basis,
yeah,
but not on a regular full-time basis.
A lot of my friends and I go to the, I haven't done it in a while, but go to local high schools and stand out there when kids are going in or out of school, and we've got hundreds of pieces of literature and posters, and we talk to them, and, you know, sometimes it's tremendous, and sometimes we escape with our lives.
Mm-hmm. And the teachers as well say that they have virtually no one to call to come in and speak. Like I said, this one teacher in Littleton High School, he can't believe how unprepared some of the pro-life speakers who come in to do a presentation. He says, I'm the first one that the students did not run over.
Well,
with constitutional questions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, run over them because they're not prepared, either emotionally get all excited and get mad because they're asking questions, or they're not prepared to deal with the Constitution questions and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to get out and speak. Bob, you can help
really
me.
Really great. I will. You know, obviously, I can't. We're just so busy here, we're over our heads. But I'd like
to
make a few calls.
You need to trim back and do this. You need to spend an hour a day on this, Bob. This is important.
Maybe we should close down our church in the radio station and just promote this thing.
If that would help, I think that would be good.
It's just an idea.
Yeah.
And it might even solve our financial problems.
Perfect.
Now, I'm so thrilled, Dana, that we finally got together again after 10 years. And to see that you are battling for the Lord. Let me ask you a question. You got a degree from Denver Seminary. You're a Christian. What does doing this have anything to do with the gospel, spreading the gospel?
Yeah, good question.
Why are you wasting your time?
I'm a Christian, of course, and love the Lord Jesus. And these are children of God, okay, these children that are being killed. And I think we have a responsibility in the Christian community to be moral activists.
That's great. That's the number one reason to do this in our desire to love and obey God is to defend innocent life.
But
the number one issue is the kids. Number two is the moms who are going to become murderers and their hearts be hardened all that more against the gospel. And number three is the whole society. The society that accepts the killing of kids is not likely to accept God.
And, again, you have to realize how highly influential the pro-abortion in the media is, okay? We've got movies. Did you see Cider House Rules?
I heard about it. I couldn't stomach
it. An hour and a half apologetic for abortion, okay? When's the last time you saw a pro-life movie?
Never.
This is why we need to get out and influence the students. We're not getting out and influencing the students to think correctly about the issue of abortion. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to do, Bob.
All right. Dana, this has been absolutely fabulous. What if there's someone that would like to contact you rather than trying to go through us? Is there an easy way for them to do that?
303-345-2059.
All right.
2059. Call me. Would love to talk to you about coming to a church.
303-345-2059. And maybe somebody even a little bit outside of Denver, they have a church or a school they'd like to get you to, maybe we could pull
that
off.
Love to go.
And
Bob's going to pay for it.
And that's right. If anybody wanted to make a financial contribution, it probably won't get thousands of dollars here. But
you know, I think you're going to have to take a part-time job, Bob, to help pay for this.
Okay. All right, I'll do that too. We'll put
Bob.
The list. Dana, it's been great. May God bless you, and I wish you the best.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Appreciate being here.
I'm shaking his hand on the radio. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. None of you matter.